Cubberty on 2FM with Super Value Travel Insurance. Holidaying at home or abroad? Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance at supervalue.ie.
Jared Barrett, good morning to you. Jared.
Morning, Ryan.
It's good to see you again.
Great to see you.
This is probably our third encounter, realistically.
People are going to start talking soon, man.
Well, you had your two late show appearances. And the first time you came on with us to talk about Pilgrim Hill.
Yeah.
And I was very taken by it because you would have been 24 then?
23, 24. 20. I was rough and ready then, Ryan.
Yeah, you were.
Yeah, I was.
But you were thoughtful and philosophical that you've got quite a... An older head on younger shoulder. Do people say that all the time?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose people could refer to that as some way boring in a sense, but I don't know. I think what it was, you know, I grew up with a lot of older brothers and you know, 8, 9, 10 years older than me. And
yeah.
I think when I was a teenager, I was maybe a man in a sense, and now I'm a guy in my mid to middle 20s. I'm probably an old man. So
yeah.
It's kind of...
Yeah.
I think it's just, you know, you are your surroundings.
Yes.
And I think I am my surroundings, and I kind of grown up with adults.
But you think a lot. This is what's striking about you, is that you think about where you're from, mm-hmm. which is Kerry.
North Kerry.
You think about Ireland as a country and its place in the world, and you think about rural, and you think about urban, and you think about addiction. And in other words, you're a very reflective person. Where did that come from? Are they teachers at school? Is it home? Where's that all from?
I think my environment, again, going back to growing up in a house, and I think in a community where everyone is 10 plus years older than you, you have to be reflective, you know? It's very hard to join in the conversation when you're 4 or 5, you know, when you're listening to adults speaking. So I think I listened an awful lot when I was young. I think, you know, my primary school, there was only 2 in my class. So
right.
it's very much, you're constantly listening and you're constantly watching. And for me, it was just having those years to kind of sit back and watch and take in was very important to me.
Mm.
And I think I took that with me as well into my secondary school years, because you can imagine going from 2 in your class to 150 in your class is quite frightening.
Different world.
Yeah.
If we look at Pilgrim Hill then, which was about rural dispossession and difficulty and loneliness and everything else in between, and you would have been in your early 20s making that. I mean, when I have to put myself in my early 20s, which was just, you know, college as it happens at the time, booze, books, birds, you know, messing.
Yeah.
In other
words,
nothing serious. And the last thing I'd be thinking of was reflecting on the rural dispossession of a 21st century Irishman.
Yeah.
Do you see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, you can definitely see the way birds wouldn't have come into that, that guy anyway. No,
yeah,
I think... you know, I had a plan from a very young age, and the plan was to get to a place, you know, of in my mid-20s, was this is where I need to be and want to be. And, you know, it was very much about coming out the traps with a film that was very much personal, that was very much me, that was very much my world, and something that had something to say. And that was where Pilgrim Hill came from. You know, so it was kind of just, you know, rural isolation was a huge problem then. It still continues to be. I think it's getting worse. I think in North Kerry, Brusna, this lovely little community in North Kerry has lost its only shop. And they won an All-Ireland Club Championship a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
There's no shop there now. They got to drive for 7, 8, 9, 10 miles to get to a shop. So there's problems going on in rural Ireland that's frightening.
Post offices, Garda stations.
Yeah, it's frightening. And people, you know, I suppose it's not sexy enough to shine a light on. You know?
Do you think that the Dublin media, me and others like us, have not disregard, but a lack of understanding of it, lack of awareness?
I wouldn't think so. I mean, here in RTÉ, there's a lot of people here in RTÉ that work that are from rural Ireland, so and everywhere else. So I think what it is more than anything, I think it is that there's just so much going on in the world right now, and there's so much going on in Ireland that we have access to, you know, before... You know, a big story might have taken the whole week with media to cover. Now there's just so much going on. I just think there's just so much going on that it's hard to keep on top of everything. But I think it's a responsibility of people that are coming from rural Ireland as well to shine a light on it.
Yeah.
So that's what I tried to do with Pilgrim Hill.
And you chose to go through the movie route, which is your thing, films.
Yeah.
So what did you, what were your knockout movies as a kid? Because there's always, you know, you've always got a great teacher in school that you, one does and one remembers. Equally, there are movies that are formative. You watch, look at that, whether it's The Wizard of Oz or whatever. whatever it might mm-hmm. be. What were yours?
You see, again, you know, when you're growing up in a house where they're all 10 years old and you're subjected to films that you shouldn't be watching. So I probably one of the first films I ever watched was probably Reservoir Dogs, which is kind of a frightening
film.
Experience.
Yes.
You know, even watching something like The Field at a very young age is quite formative.
That would fit.
Yeah, you know,
mix.
You watch these things and they really form, you know, In the Name of the Father, Jim Sheridan had a real impact on me when I was growing up. And so there's a various amount of... I'll tell you one of the biggest things for me was, you know, I had a local premiere down in Listowel for Glasland last week, down at the cinema in the Classic in Listowel, just for the cinema and Kieran, who runs it. And you know, one of my earliest experiences was, you know, my aunt taking me to the cinema to see Pocahontas, you know, right? And but she went in to see Braveheart, and I came out early, and to see the people walking out of Braveheart crying in distraught really had an impact on me. And I remember going home in the car with her, kind of like, and she wouldn't speak and she was crying, and I was like, okay, there's a power in this stuff, whatever it is. Listen, various amount of things have
so you formed saw me. You saw by the punter's reaction what you could do with this medium to deliver a message.
I think, and the classic example of that would be Pilgrim Hill. I think there's been so many people rabbiting on about rural isolation with the last 20 years. And next thing, this little film comes along and it makes an impact and people talk about it. And then you hear about people in communities around Ireland putting on buses, bringing farmers into town for a pint and all that, carrying them home for shopping and bits and pieces. I think sometimes by telling stories on the screen or wherever, it has more of an impact than someone shouting into the doll.
Okay, yeah, well, that makes a lot of sense too. Glassland, we spoke briefly on the Late Late Show a couple of weeks ago with Jack Rayner and yourself, and you know, we've moved from the hills to the flats and housing estates of Dublin, where you deal with addiction this time. And you've reflected on that since you moved from Kerry to Dublin, that's where you kind of got a taste for that and you saw people's lives were not very pretty.
No, I mean, it's certain people in a sense, but you know, the visibility of addiction really struck me, you know. Thankfully, I come from a family that addiction hasn't touched, not that I know of. And I think we're well able to hide it in rural Ireland in a sense.
Yeah.
It is there, but it's not as visible, you know, it's scattered because of the population. But when I moved up here, it was everywhere. It was on the loose, it was on trains, it was on buses, it was on the street, it was in shops. And for me, you know, I of course you have empathy with people that are suffering from the disease of addiction, but the empathy I had was who are at home, you know, who are the people at home that are dealing with this?
Yeah.
And a lot of the friends that I made, I saw a lot of them were dealing with their parents that were suffering from addiction. And I was just like, okay, I need to tap into something here. And what was fascinating was when myself and Jack were in London last week doing press for the film, a lot of people kept bringing up was, we haven't seen this story told before. We haven't seen the story of the people that are dealing with the person with addiction told before.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I took that route.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Well, it's intriguing because of Jack Rayner, who is extraordinary in the film, to his credit, it's nuanced. And it's not an easy role from, and as I said, we were saying before, from to go from running around in cars and Transformers to putting on this stoical performance is quite the feat. But he's the good son, with the troubled mother, and he's the carer.
Yeah,
so that is a very common and not very often acknowledged story in today as well. By the way, there are people listening in whose mother is already drinking or whose father is already, you know, doing some class of drug that is, and they're going to have to pick up the mess.
Yeah, I think it's not sexy enough to tell on film, and I think people shy away from it. For me, it was vitally important to start my career with two or three projects that I'm so proud of and that I'm so passionate about. And it was the same at Glassland. I think, you know, I think Jack's character is my generation.
Yeah.
And my duty is to hopefully, you know, talk to my generation as a filmmaker.
Do you think you're doing that?
I don't know. But I think the reaction I'm getting from, you know, I was in screenings in Galway last week and in Cork and all over the place.
Yeah.
The people that are coming up to me are saying that. The people that contact me are saying that. But look, you know, for me, it's just about, as Jack always says, if you can help one person out there, like one person, and, you know, the reaction we got at Sundance as well was that there was a lot of people affected by it. So I think for me, more than anything, it was about shining a light on addiction and shining a light on the people that are dealing with the addict. And that was important.
What do you see are the, say, let's say, three major issues hitting your generation as a 20-something in 2015, what do you think, if when you're out and about and you're talking to people your age group, what are the big hot-button issues for them?
I mean, I think a lot of it is, I think one of the biggest things for my generation is where we belong. You know, so many of my friends left Ireland a couple of years ago because there was nothing here for them. And I met, you know, I was having had the screening of Glassland in London last week, and a crowd of them turned up to it, and we all had to chat afterwards. And what I see from them is they don't know where they belong. Yeah, Ireland is improving, you know. Rural Ireland isn't improving, but urban Ireland is definitely improving. But yet they've set up shop in London and they've set up shop all over the world. And, you know, there is a pull now to come back. But I think what's really sad is that they don't know where they belong now. Do they? Should they stay where they are, or should they come back? So that's fascinating to
me. Cut across, there was a time when you left, you're out, you're out.
Yeah.
Whereas we were talking with Maya last week about how they're kind of commuting.
Yeah.
From London and because of air travel, even from New York.
But that's the sad thing. I mean, there's a friend of mine who I went to school with in London, okay? Got top of his class, you know, it with the Leaving Cert. Had a really great job in terms of qualification. And now he's over in London working the building sites. And for whatever reason, he just found himself in this rut. And I said to him, I said, are you going to come back? And he was like, I don't know, you know, I don't know. And what I got from him was the hardest thing to do is to take that 55-minute flight back to Kerry Airport. That's the hardest thing to do. You know, you're only 55 minutes away. And it's really hard for him to come back, because I think there's a kind of a, not a shame to come back, but there's a kind of a thing of you know, you have set up a life over there. Mm. But I think what's really interesting is how difficult it is even over in London, you know? You know, they came to Brixton to me and I said, how long did it take you to come on the tube? And he said about an hour and a half, and he's another hour and a half home, and he's to get up in the morning at 6:30 to go to work. Yeah. So there, it's tough out there. And I'll always remember the story he told me was that, you know, when he moved over there a couple of years ago, he was living in a house with four Polish guys. And he was 55 minutes from home, and he was so lost in translation, he told me. And he'd just go up into his bedroom and he'd play his guitar and he'd cry.
What was he crying for?
Because you're away from home, you know?
It's a home bird stuck in London.
Yeah, but I think what's sad is that you're only 55 minutes away and you feel so far away.
Yeah.
It's like you're a galaxy away.
Yeah, I can understand that entirely. I often think when I'm talking to you of Brian Friel and Philadelphia, Here I Come.
Yeah,
and you know the private car and the public car, and the idea of Ballybeg, you know, the small town, and breaking out, and the guys that get left behind. And then I think sometimes about, you know, I was talking about this morning, the famine. I don't think I'm 42 thereabouts. As a generation, I don't think we talk about it. I don't think we understand. We've gone, top of the morning to you, you know, Irish bars all over the world.
Yeah.
Those Irish bars are there for the most tragic reasons.
Yeah, no, seriously. Yeah,
like there's not. If you go back to the kernel of the story, and yet the famine story, I don't think has been dealt with. You talk about shame about coming home, and the great shame and the great hunger. It's like it's no thanks, not comfortable, because it's actually a horrible story.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of guys shouting and roaring in the Senate in America that are there because some lad survived for them to be there, you know, and I think that it's something that we don't talk about enough. I think it's something that we don't acknowledge. I think it's something that, you know, that it's a, I think it's important for, you know, our generation to really look at and study. I mean, to be honest with you, at school it never really, whether it was something to do with shame or whether it was something to do with the generation that was teaching me was told not to talk about it, but it was never really referenced, and it was always much passed over.
It's embarrassing. It was embarrassing for us. If you think of it, like 1916, as we're coming up to the 100, and before that, it wasn't a million miles away from 1916 in terms of years. In terms of Irish history, it's only down the road.
I mean, the famine was only 168 years ago. It's frightening to think about it. I mean, there's people's grandmother's mother that would have probably been in it.
Yeah.
You know? And it's frightening, and I think it's something that needs to be touched upon and needs to be discussed in detail, and hopefully.
Have you been to Strokestown?
I have, yeah. It's stunning, and it's frightening, and it's definitely, it's a huge part of who we are, and I think we need to acknowledge it, and hopefully I'll figure that out really soon.
Well, listen, you're the only man for the job as far as I'm concerned, so keep that going. Let's talk a bit about other projects, because Charlize Theron, Dakota Fanning and Will Poulter in Brain on Fire. Now, last time we spoke, we were in the green room chatting. You told me to read the book, which I haven't had a chance to yet, but why should I read this book? Why should our listeners read the book?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating story of, isolation and loneliness in the most, probably most worst way it can affect you in a way. I mean, this is a girl who gets a mystery illness and nobody can diagnose it. No doctor in America can diagnose it. And she finds herself in a hospital room, trapped in a sense, waiting for somebody to come with an answer. And I think it's the most isolating and lonely experience that you can have. And for me, it's an incredible opportunity to, you know, adapt this, you know, New York Times bestselling memoir and bring it to life and touch upon a topic that I think that, you know, that's really frightening. You know, it's what, you know, going on 9:50 now. There's probably people waiting outside doctors' rooms to be told really bad news all over Ireland.
Yeah.
And we will never know. And I think it's something important to touch upon. And there's a few people in my life recently that have gone down with illness and sickness. And, you know, to see the psychological effect it can have on people and to see the way it can take somebody that is very much a statue of strength and just rip them apart.
Yeah.
And for me, I think with Brain on Fire, it gives me the opportunity to explore that in a way that's really, really important, I think. So it's I'm shooting in New York this summer. It's really exciting. I'm very humbled to get the opportunity to do it. And it's very exciting.
Pilgrim Hill came about financially, at least, was helped by you doing a makey-uppy loan from the credit union.
Yeah.
You spoofed your way through
it.
Yeah,
but sure, don't ever, everyone spoofs a loan.
Oh, here, I'm not knocking it.
I'm just
commenting on the fact that you said you were getting a...
Yeah, I was buying an old car, yeah. And he got a Philip. Yeah. Hi, it was the best thing that ever happened to the credit union man since Imelda May. So I was like, it was the amount of publicity they got. No, listen, look, I think that's just, you got to pull yourself out of a hole, man.
I hear you. You know, you're seat of the pants stuff all the time. Yeah. And now look at you, you know, heading over to the States with bigger projects. Are you daunted by the budgets or the star power? Or do you just see it as business as usual with a quirk?
I always said it, money is only energy. It gets people up off their arse. That's all it is, you know? All it is. And I think for me, more than anything, you know, it's the same frame. It's going to be the same cinema screens the film is going to be on. I'm using the exact same camera. At the end of the day, I'm just telling another story with different people.
That's the way you see it.
You have to see it that way. There's
but
no
you'll
point.
Be surrounded by all the of Hollywood and all the and minors and
yeah, but
and
I mean,
agents.
You have to be clever enough and wise enough to use that madness. And I think those that know how to use that madness and use it as fuel, you can go very far by using it, you know.
What directors do you admire?
I wouldn't say Jim Sheridan is somebody that's is just, he's a ball of energy, and he's somebody that, like, you know, between The Field and My Left Foot and In the Name of the Father and everything else has really impacted me in my life. Listen, there's numerous people that I can say, but I think, you know, I think you very, to stand out, you very much have to do your own thing.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not in the zone of, you know, of looking at other directors and trying to emulate what they do. I try and do my own thing, and hopefully people like that.
You mentioned Leonardo DiCaprio the last time we spoke, so he's going to be in one of your movies as well.
Yeah, I'm working on a project with him. It's based on an Irish author's novel that's incredibly exciting. I optioned that book, and he touched base with me about it, and we're working on that together, and hopefully that's going to pop up really, 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 really soon, and I'm incredibly excited by it. And
have you met him to discuss? Or
it's been fantastic.
What's he like as a person?
I'm sure he's not a normal lad. He's
sold
out. Yeah, listen, all these people are just—they just happen to do what they do.
That's exactly.
I mean, people probably have a perception of you as well, but
God
at the end of the
them.
Day, you're just a normal person that goes home and probably watches box sets as well, like all of us.
I do, and cry.
You know? And
like
reading about the famine. Yeah. So I think
but it's so funny. The celebrity thing can be.
But the celebrity thing people
have
to understand is, like, you know, I was over in Los Angeles recently and I was at a premiere, and I mean, it's the most disheartening thing to be at, because it's a couple of sheets of plywood, right?
Yeah.
A few lights and a few flashy people standing around on the side of a street.
Yeah.
And it's just, that's all
that's
it is.
That's what it is.
Listen,
it's
camouflage for reality.
Well, that's a very eloquent way of putting it. Sharon from Cork says, as a fellow writer, Gerard Barrett is an inspiration. I admire the way he kickstarted his career by getting a credit union loan and making Pilgrim Hill by himself. Too many people have a sense of entitlement to funding nowadays. Does he find that you need to understand the commercial aspect as well as the creative part of the business in order to be successful?
I think you have to be smart about things. I think, you know, I had the opportunity to make Lastland for maybe 4 or 5 times the budget if I wanted to. But I think what was important was, let's make it for as little as possible. Let's hold on to creative control. And then everyone wins, in a sense.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Creatively I win, creatively Jack wins, and whoever else is involved from a financing point of view will win, because hopefully the project will turn out the right way. So I think it's about being smart. I think there's too much money spent on a lot of projects, I think, in my own opinion, here in Ireland sometimes. And for me, it's just about, you know, being realistic with things. I think if you have a story to tell, I think to start out, figure out a way of telling it for as little as possible.
Thinking, says the text, is vastly underrated. It's one of the reasons I still miss John B. Keane so much. Of course, you'd have known, and he was the soulful thinker with that extra magic of kindness and a deep compassion for the human condition. And Jared also has those gifts, which is, I think, an appropriate way to leave it for now. This being your last interview now for
a long time.
I'd say you're blue in the face talking about Glassland now. You're ready for something else now.
Yeah, I mean, it's been an incredible couple of weeks. Myself and Jack, we got to spend a lot of time together and doing press in London and here and all that. And
what a good egg he is.
Oh, listen, he's a great guy. Yeah. And he's incredibly genuine. And you know, we are chalk and cheese, like, you know, right. We are Laurel and Hardy in a way. I mean, you can't take
but there's nice chemistry.
Urban and rural together. No, I mean, we're just really, but we get on like a house on fire. And he's somebody that I'm very, very fond of. And you know, he made Glassland when he was 21. So I'm like,
incredible.
He's got so much more to give, and he's a great guy, and I hope people get out there and see him in Glassland, because I think he does something special there.
You've all these movies coming up. You're also getting married.
I think so. Yeah.
Embarrass your poor fiance on the TV. Sorry about that. But that, did you say I think so? Yeah.
I'm joking, Ryan. I'm joking. By God, I definitely am getting married. Yeah.
Thanks for the clarification.
Yeah. I definitely am.
Yeah, well, congratulations.
No, thank you. Yeah, it's very exciting. As I said in the Late Late Show, it's my biggest production to date.
It certainly is. And keep saying that, because you got to keep everyone at home sweet. Jared, congratulations on all your success.
No, thank you.
Looking forward to talking to you again as the career gets bigger and better all the way along the way. So you'll be heading off to the States soon enough, will you?
Yeah, pretty soon now. But I have a project as well here in Ireland. It's a mini TV series that I created, that my company has created with myself. So that's really going to touch upon my generation being confused of where we are in terms of, do we belong here
at
home?
For RT or beyond? Or?
It's beyond. And so it's going to be exciting. And so that's probably going to shoot later on this year as well. So even though I am going off, this is my home and I love it. And it's where I'm from and it's who I am. And don't worry, I won't leave.
You won't leave. Good on you, Jared. Thanks for coming in to see us today.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Good luck with all your projects. I'm a great fan of what you do, so keep it going.